We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
WYXR, Memphis, Tennessee, 91.7 FM.
Good evening. My name is Jared J.B. Boyd, and I welcome you to listen to a recent installment of WYXR Stereo Sessions presented by Mempho, where we'll be featuring 1973 album by the band Dee Beaver called Combinations.
Just really excited about this record. Since we first started Stereo Sessions, I was like, all right, I got you. We're going to make it work. We're going to get there. And once we showed people what this thing is, I wanted to make sure that we rolled the red carpet out for Nancy and whatever guests Nancy wants to have. As you know, WYXR is a very eclectic station with all sorts of personalities, all sorts of tastes. It's like no other station in the world. And this event, I think, is one of our marquee events and is a testament to that. So have you been to a Stereo Session before? Wave your hand. All right. If you've never been, make some noise. Go like, go crazy. All right. See, I can hear better than I can see. That's why. So the Stereo Session is, have we explained the A and the B selection, how that works? Oh, we haven't done that. All right, I'll have the pleasure of explaining to you. If you have an A in your hand, when we get to side A, what'd I miss? Okay, if you have an A in your hand, and we break to listen to the record, we're going to do a little talk, we're going to set the stage. If you have an A in your hand, then you can go inside of the smaller listening room when we break out to listen. If you have a B, you'll hang out in here. We'll be playing it simultaneously in both areas. We'll come out, we'll talk a little bit more about what we heard, and then we'll swap so everyone can experience the beautiful speakers in there, Eggleston Works, that are made right in Binghamton. I mean, this is state-of-the-art listening equipment in here. After side A, okay. Ms. Generous David Beaver had a raffle that you're conducting, correct? We'll announce the winners after side A, all right? So if you're on the edge of your seat, if you can't wait to leave, to get out of here, to see if you made it, if you won, we'll announce it then. But again, thank you to all our sponsors. Thank you to all of you for supporting this. As Robbie said, we're a nonprofit station. And as you see, we do more than just play the music on the radio. We want to make sure that everyone gets to experience music and experience community and culture and experience Memphis, because there's a reason there are so many lost records or records that maybe the masses haven't heard. It's because we've got a hell of a lot of creative people that come through this town, who are born and raised in this town, who love to collaborate and work together. And we can't lose anything to time. We got to analyze all of it. So we're getting started. We're getting rolling. And if you love Memphis and you love music, that's why you're here. Tell a friend about it and go ahead and donate. Go to WYXR.org and support us. We're your community radio station. We love you, but we need you. All right, so thank y'all for not heckling me this time. I know there's always one. I'll give you a swirly after, all right? Meet you in the bathroom. I'm going to hand it over to the lovely, incredible host of Memphis Undercover, Nancy A.G.
Thank you, JB. Appreciate that. And I'm really excited about this record tonight. As I told David when I reached out to him, I've had this record. I bought it. Some of you may remember the Paperback Shack. There was one, I believe, downtown and one near the university, and I got a lot of records there. I picked this record up there. I didn't know who it was, and I went home and listened, and I was just blown away because it was unlike anything I was hearing coming out of Memphis at that time. Plus, it had some of my favorite Memphis musicians, some of who are here tonight. Of course, David Beaver, and we've got Tommy Cathy and Joel Williams. Primo Memphis musicians, played in tons of bands, but I come up with different versions of what I consider this record, art rock, prog pop, I don't know, but it's great and you're going to love it. Anybody here ever heard the record? All right. Oh, that's good. Well, anyway, I'm going to start this now, and if I am a little nervous, I am, because I'm usually behind a mic in the studio, not up here in front of all of you. But I want to introduce you first to David. And David, could you kind of just tell us what brought this about? I mean, you were in the Gentrys, Then you were in a band called Edgewood, and Edgewood kind of morphed into D. Beaver, or what?
Yeah, it did. Edgewood really recorded three albums. We recorded one at National Studio, Ardent Studios, when it was on National. That was a long time ago. It never came out, and so later on, we thought, well, if that one didn't come out, we can do another one. And we did. We did a second one at National, on National at Ardent Studios, and it didn't come out either. I thought, we're batting 1,000, right? So anyway, Edgewood played live at the Shell, and the people from TMI Studios were there, and they asked us if we would like to come record. And we said, sure. So Edgewood went there, and we recorded a third album, and it did come out. You can actually get that one. And bands are like families and marriages, and they work until they don't, okay? So people went their different ways, and I asked the studio, can I do a project? I've got songs that I'd like to record. And they said, sure. So bingo, bingo, best drummer, best bass player in town then and now, okay? Serious. And we just started recording, and it was great.
So the songs, though, had you already been writing these songs? Because you are, as you say, primarily a songwriter.
Yeah. I'm a songwriter first and a keyboard player second. And I had already written some of the songs, and we were working on them. And kind of, these guys are so good, you can just tell them, I kind of want you to be between here and here. And they go, okay. And they go work it out, and they come back and go, we got it. And it's amazing that you, somebody that's that talented and so easy to direct, made that record what it is. It's not anything, but they made it really great, in my opinion.
You know, and what a lot of people may not realize is that most of the vocals on this record were done by Jimmy Jameson, who many people know, you know. Yes. But you go and you hear it, but it's a young Jimmy Jameson, isn't it? How old were all of y'all then?
I was like 20, 21 or 22.
23.
How old do you think Jimmy was about?
Say that, 22.
22?
Yeah.
Pat Taylor. Y'all remember Pat Taylor? Pat Taylor sang a couple of songs. David Mayo sang a song. Great friend of mine, good keyboard player, guitar player, vocalist. I sang a couple of songs, and to me, the stories were different. The songs were different, and I liked having different singers on different stories, and it kind of worked out for me. What do you think?
It was great. The thing that amazed me is, and I think you'll hear it when you hear the very first song, is how young Jimmy's vocal is, how young he sounds right on it. You'll see what I'm talking about. Really cool, though.
And you also played in Target with Jimmy, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Tommy. So, was this a concept album? Because
we didn't know what we were doing. No kidding. It really came together as we went along. And a lot of times, as a songwriter, you'll have three or four songs. You go, well, this one's not so great. And it winds up being the best one. You just never know until you record it, you sing it, you put all the parts on, you put all the instruments on, and it comes out being the best one. So we just kind of made it up as we went along. I was an impatient songwriter back then, and I would work on a song for a couple days, and then I'd get a different idea, and I'd put it to the side, and I'd work on another one, and I'd get, you know, I like didn't finish anything, so I kind of strung them all together. And wouldn't you say?
Definitely.
And somehow it seemed to work.
But there was also, I mean, another album, right? Were you writing all these songs? And you had two albums worth, but the other album never got released, correct?
Correct. It didn't get released. It's Combinations 2. I did donate a copy here. You can come and check it out and listen to it. But it was a little more rock and roll, and Tommy and I wrote a song together, and Joel and I wrote a song together, and it was kind of more of a group effort It's really good, though. I really like it, and it's a shame it didn't come out. But it didn't come out, so what can you say?
Well, you kind of had free reign in the studio, and who was responsible? I mean, this was TMI, Transmaximus, which was Steve Cropper's studio, and Jerry Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. Jerry Williams, there were no boundaries, no limits. One day I said, boy, I'd really like to have strings on that. And the next thing I know, Carl Marsh and I are working out the string parts, and he writes it. I hum it. He writes it. He can really do that stuff. And like the next time we were in the studio, the Memphis Symphony string section was in there. And I'm going, wow, this is, you know, there's no sampling. Nobody has Pro Tools. Nobody even had a cell phone, okay? So if you hear strings, they're strings. The only thing that's synthetic on that whole record is there's an arp on it. But there's oboes, there's clarinets, there's bassoon, there's accordion.
Octosoon,
yeah, that's a little trick we did. Carl can play bassoon, and it was pretty low, so we slowed the tape down to half speed and had him play the bassoon, and then when we put it back up to right speed, it sounded like a little, I don't know, a little weird oboe or something. But there were no limits. We could just do anything we wanted to do. It was amazing. And I never saw a bill. They never talked about budget. It was just a phenomenal experience. And I'll thank Jerry Williams forever for just letting us go at it.
If Jerry comes tonight, he might bring the bill with him.
I hope there's not interest added onto that because it's been a minute. So
hey.
How are you, brother?
So you were in the studio, you were working, you recorded most of it in 72, you said, and it was released in 73 and distributed by RCA.
Yes. It was between October 72 and December 72 and came out, I think, in April of 73. They had trouble getting a good picture.
Why? The picture was you. Who did the cover art for that?
If you get to look at a copy of it, open up the inside and you'll see everybody there. But I'm not there. But you'll notice my shadow is in the water. It was a terrible picture of me. I said, just cut that out. So he went back and took another picture with nobody there, and he cut it out.
Well, you were telling me a story the other day about one of your musicians. He was blind. I thought that was a really interesting story. What was he?
Tell him about Jay. Jay Spell.
Oh, Jay Spell, incredible, incredible musician. He could pick up a telephone and whistle or hum tones and call people without pressing the button.
For free.
That's how his ears
were. He went through the system and it was free.
And just incredible. Played fiddle, played keyboards. He's just incredible musician. We were fortunate to have him on that record.
Tell him about him tapping his change.
You better tell him about that.
He was blind from birth, and he would walk through the studio, always with change in his pocket, tapping the change, and he'd walk up to something and walk around it. You know, like a bat can do. I know that's weird, but we watched him do it, so it's real.
What do you want to, okay, tell somebody who's never heard this album? Okay, side A, what do you want them to listen for? What do you want?
It's pretty, side A is pretty brisk. It's about 17 minutes and it goes real fast. But something that I've always liked is the second song is called Don't Give Up, and it's about an aging rock guitar player who knows he wants to quit and he's trying to get his son to practice. So that's the theme of the song. But I've played with some really fabulous guitar players in my career, and Jimmy Tarbutton played guitar on this song, and to this day, those guitar breaks he played still raises the hair on my arm. I'm telling you, it's fabulous. But if you can tear your ears away from the guitar breaks, listen to what Tommy and Joel are doing on bass and drums underneath him. They are driving that song to the moon, I'm telling you. It's one of my favorite songs on there.
What was the single?
It's Gonna Take Time. Pat Taylor sang it. I think we sold 7 copies. Well, 6 copies. One guy leased one. He said, I'll get back to you.
Do you, you know, when I kind of went online just to kind of, because this album isn't on Spotify or Apple Music or any of those, so, but I found it on like Discogs, but I also saw these reviews, and anybody that they would call it, like I said, prog pop, psycho pop, and art pop, but everybody always was blown away by the musicianship and the songwriting in any of the reviews I read. And I know you told me when you write, you don't listen to a lot of other musicians because you don't want them in your head when you write. Kind of talk about your process.
I'm afraid of that. I haven't had the radio in my car in a decade or more, probably. I don't play albums. I don't play CDs. I just prefer to just try to come up with something on my own. And there's a lot of really, really songs out there that I wouldn't want anybody to hear, you know? It doesn't always work. But it takes me a long time to write a song. Back then, they were just coming like that. But now it takes a lot of work. Tommy and I are writing right now. And how long does it take, Tommy?
Well, the way this works is I'll write the music, and I'll send it to David with total confidence he's going to do something incredible with it. And he usually does. He hasn't failed yet. And it just varies. I guess it depends on how much you like the song is how fast you get it. But he does them real quick, 2 weeks at the most.
On this album that you're going to hear, there were 2 or 3 of those songs that when we would finish recording, I don't know if you know this or not, JR would leave, and he'd leave me in the studio with the piano mic'd and into my headphones, and after everybody was gone, I'd sit there and play the piano for hours, and I wrote 2 or 3 songs the night before, and the next time we'd come back in, I'd play it for these guys. And that was easy because these guys take over. They just go, okay, we got it. We'll do this, this, and this. So it went really fast that, as far as that recording.
Grant me the peace I'm knowing. Patience is mine. Make me strong and understanding. Teach me faith and trust inside. You.
Thank you. You're listening to Stereo Sessions presented by Memfo, where Nancy Agee sits down with David Beaver.
What everybody think about side A of D. Beaver combinations, right? Isn't that great? Great. So, David, Tommy, Joel, how did it feel hearing that on those?
I think I should have been paid by the note.
I know I should have.
Oh, you were paid?
I just know at 22 years of age, I was full of myself and I played a whole lot. But it was just it's always amazing to hear it. I'm just so proud of that record. As I was talking to you earlier, I had never heard anything come out of Memphis that sounded like it, or anything since then that sounded like it.
True. True.
And I was just real proud to be a small part of that, really.
So, David, okay, one of my favorite songs on side A is Anthony Beecham. And,
yeah.
Is that where the title of the album came from? Because you have the combinations. Seen
no.
So many combinations. I'm not going to sing it.
I'll talk about both. Combinations is about being in bands and trying to make it work, and this guy tried, and this guy, and these two are great, and we need a better so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And I had a friend of mine that I grew up with. His name is Ken Woodley, and he was a drummer, and we played together. We went to the same high school and to the same church, and we played together for many years, and then later on we tried to get back together and play. You remember practicing in a garage on Summer?
Yeah.
Okay, and he was also a songwriter and decided that he kind of wanted to go his own way. He didn't want to do it. So that song's to him, you know, it's okay, go do what you want to do. And it's about combinations of different people trying to play music together. Anthony Beecham,
yeah.
I just like the way the name sounds.
Okay, well, that works.
I like to write songs about relationships because everybody has them, whether it's with your brother, your wife, your neighbor, your boss, whatever. And they either come straight from what I feel, or I select a character and speak through the character, and then sometimes it's just all fictitious. And that's all fictitious about a little brat that didn't appreciate his parents. He wanted to move out, and he didn't ever want to go home. That's all that song is.
Well, you know, I already asked you if it was a concept album because, I mean, the songs do flow together. I mean, they just sound like they belong together.
Well, we made that happen because there was a bunch of just different things, and
right,
we made that flow together.
So we're going to hear side B in a few minutes. Is there a big difference here between A and B?
Yeah, A kind of flows together. You notice that there were three or four little songs put together. Side B is not like that. It's individual songs. First song on it is The Wizard of Menlo Park. When I was, that's what they call Thomas Edison in California. He lived in Menlo Park. And when I was a kid, I went to college for a year and decided I didn't like it, and I quit. And my parents were really cool about it. But every now and then they'd go, you know, if this music thing doesn't work out, you can always get an education. Finish your education and get a job. So I said, okay. Well, I wondered
to myself.
We had
a nickel for every time we heard that.
Yeah. I wondered, I imagined Thomas Edison's dad giving him that same talk. This inventing stuff ain't working. You need to get a job. And I wondered what we wouldn't have if he had done that.
Call the wizard.
now called the Wizard.
Oh,
time to think it over. You just weren't strong enough to tell me that you'd found someone new, so instead you deceived me and denied it all along.
Listening to Stereo Sessions presented by Memfo, where Nancy Agee sits down with David Beaver.
Thank y'all for coming out. We're a little surprised that this many people came. We are very pleased to have you.
Well, that was side B, and David got a question for you. What was that at the end of that last song? Was that piano, keyboards? What?
Clavinet.
Ah, okay, there you go. All right.
It was great.
Okay, the album. Okay, real quick. Oh, Sherman.
One thing that was different was my age. At Ardent on National, we had an engineer named Richard Roseborough, and we went in there and cut two records and kind of the same thing. Nobody told us what to do, and we did what we wanted. And back then, we just didn't have the contacts to get those things out. You know, I'm a songwriter and a musician, and we put the album together, and then we say, okay, here it is. Make me famous. Yeah. And it's just, we didn't know any better, you know? So, it's hard to answer that question, but the technology was so much better by the time we got to TMI that it was just a great experience.
Another thing about the difference between the two studios, the Ardent studio on National was a fairly small building. TMI was a cave. It was huge. It was the huge room down there, and the control booth was way up here, and whole different attitude, whole different atmosphere, but very cool. Loved playing it. And here's the guy who owned the studio, Jerry Williams.
You don't know how I feel about these guys. They're all like my kids from in the late 60s and 70s, along with others. And I see so many people here now. We all look different, we're all older, but I see so many people that I've known from then and before. Dr. Gary Earhart and his wife, biggest musical fans on the face of the earth, and Jack Rowell's first band, Jimmy Jameson's first band. He decided different from us, David. He found a job. None of us found a job. I rode a bus to California. When I came back and opened TMI, Stax had bankrupted. So fortunately, we got Ronnie Capone as an engineer. We had Jimmy Gaines rolling up chords, actually, before he went to California and got gazillion records sold. When David called me, this is just not what I do. When he called me, and we've talked from time to time about things, and if you're a layperson and have never been in the record business, when we moved back from California and opened TMI, we were distributed by CBS. Hallelujah. You think the world, the sky is open for you if you're an artist. But it's no different than releasing one from Ardent on National and saying, well, now we got it, what are we going to do? It's the same, and for these guys' benefit, the things that happen in reference to getting a hit record, your chances are 1 million to 1. Well, they didn't say 0 to 1 million, so at least you got a chance. But the procedure, David's album, was the chosen album by CBS at their convention in 1971, I guess it was. 72. Yeah. And it was their chosen album at their convention for all their international people to come and look, go home and make this a hit. They spent a lot of money. We spent a lot of money. It may be the album, and this is not vain or braggadocious, but that album, when you've got guys like David, Tommy, Joel Williams, Jim Johnson, Jay Spell, I mean, I can go on and on. We had about 30-something full-time employees, musicians, which was the first time that ever happened in Memphis. Everybody got a paycheck every week. And we brought the bankers out and introduced them to these people. So the first time ever in Memphis, musicians were treated like citizens. They could buy cars on time and they could go buy a house. And the bank would allow us to kiss the paper. So those are the things I'm proudest of. Failures, the Dee Beaver album, the combination of. We don't consider those failures. You're here listening to it now. You came here. You took your time to come and honor these three guys. But there were so many more that were involved with you guys. And it's easy to open a place, equip it with the best technology available to man, build a place from scratch, and design it so it works for musicians. People forget it all starts with a song and the musicians and the engineer. And finally, that's the easy part. Nobody can tell you you can't go in a studio. Nobody can tell you you can't write a song, you can't play the guitar. We may never have heard the best guitar player on the face of the earth. They're pumping gas somewhere because they didn't have stick-to-itness. David said, well, I quit school because I believed in music. Look at Tommy. How many doves have you won?
Two.
Well, I mean, you can't eat them, but they create and generate interest around you so you can get a job. My whole thing in my life has been, and I don't think I've ever, you guys wouldn't know this, but from when I started in this business, I had my first hit in 1959, a song called Last Night by a group called the Marquise. George Klein signed Ronnie Stutes, changed his name to Ronnie Angel, and Don Nix, one of Joel's buddies, was in the band as a baritone player. I said, well, I think, you know, these guys are really good players, so I signed them. Well, they had the hit, and Ronnie was a B-side and didn't have one. But later, he was at TMI, and he did the album covers and anything that had to do with artwork for these guys, them and hundreds of others, actually. And Bubby's here somewhere. Where's Stevie? Bubby's here. He's been there since he was like 5 years old or 6 years old or something. He was at TMI coming and going like, he was full-time. It allowed him to grow up to be a musician, but he was like others. He wanted to make, he became a school teacher. Not just a school teacher, but he taught kids that couldn't even go to the bathroom by themselves at the Shrine School for 27, 31, some lifetime. So I'm glad to be able to say something. This is the first time I've done anything like this. But when I came, when Dee Beaver called me and said, Jerry, you need to come, I want you to come, that meant the world to me. I see Tommy regularly, it means the world to me that he's one of my kids and one of the most respected musicians from this area or any area. If you were cutting a session in New York and you wanted a great bass player, come to Memphis and call Tommy. Because he can compete with those guys, if not I. Excel. Look at Joel Williams. Where are you going to get a better drummer? He's a timekeeper. He's a clock. When somebody asks him about click tracks, Well, that's
I know about them now.
I mean, to ask Joel Williams about a click track, he is a click track. You know, it's, and forgive me for taking more time than I meant to just say thank you for coming for these guys. But it means so much for Gary and for y'all to be here for these guys, because I know you knew them when they were all kids, your age. You know, everybody grew up together. We all grew up together. But what I was going to say is my pride factor, and it's not to be vain. But no Memphis musician from then until now, and I've been doing this since 1954, this month is 70 years. Wow. But I happen to be lucky. I was one of the ones that was in the right, no brains involved. Was standing over there at the right time, next to the right person, who said, hey, can you do this? And I said, yep. And that's kind of how it starts. But no Memphis musician can lay claim, nor would ever lay claim, that they paid me anything. Not a commission or a salary or a piece of the door or whatever. I happen to be the worst drummer on the face of the earth. And by accident, started getting some groups, not from Memphis, but everywhere. Revere, you know, Merrily, Chad and Jeremy. So you don't have to get a $30 commission from somebody that might need their light bill paid. So that was kind of the theory of me going into and being in this business and opening TMI and putting people on salary instead of saying, hey, would you mind coming over and hitting the note? Oh, and if we sell one, we'll pay you. And they go get on their bicycle and ride for an hour or two home, not even able to get a car or pay for the gas. So TMI was born out of love, a lot of love. And these guys were all a part of it, and they're all still part of my 100 or 200 kids now. And I want to tell them how much I thank them.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you so much. That was special. All right. I also briefly want to acknowledge James Kraft. His father, Henry Kraft, at Master Kraft Studios, mastered this album and many others. Thank you. David, the album's released. Critical response, fans, did you tour?
Did not tour. We got good reviews in Rolling Stone, Cashbox, and Zoo World, which were the rock and roll magazines of the day. They gave us really good reviews. We did play live at Overton Park Shell.
Okay.
And
a tape of that exists.
Yes. Yeah, we did tape it too. And then we played once in Arkansas with Black Oak, Arkansas. The music you heard is really difficult to reproduce on stage. And when we did it at the Overton Park Show, we had like 9 or 10 people up there, incredible people. So it was just really hard to take on the road. So no, we didn't tour.
Okay. Yeah, it's very intricate, the music is. So the D. Beaver, some people and some, I read that thought it was like a solo album, but D. Beaver was a band album. Am I right?
I asked him if I could do a project, and when I brought these guys in, it became
a
group.
Band album.
A group. So I wrote everything, but, you know, it would be nothing without what they did. So.
Well, they did great. So, any remarks? Are we ready? Okay. Here's JB.
Give it up for this entire group up here. For Nancy, please give it up for Nancy.
Yay.
Doing an incredible job, not only bringing this record to the forefront to my attention, but also for doing it, and you were astounding as the host this evening.
I wanted to thank Nancy because she's the one that submitted that record to them to be approved, and it was approved, so thank you so much.
To echo what Mr. Williams said earlier, and thank you so much for being with us tonight and for those remarks. This is all about loving on these musicians and what they've done, and you as well. So I want to invite all of you, if you have questions, if you have something just to share with him, even if it's just encouragement or love, just come up here and give it to him. And we'll continue to play the record a bit and have a little fun, and we'll break the room down and mingle. And I want to thank again our sponsors, but also Memphis Listening Lab and Kristen for allowing us to be here this evening. And thank all of you for braving what might be some interesting weather here. So please get home safely. Thank you so much. And go to WYXR.org. Continue to support our station, 91.7 FM. And please, again, if you can, donate, WYXR.org.